Hi, and welcome back to the Beyond the Peloton podcast. I'm saying hello. I should be saying dobro dan, because we're seeing Slovenian domination in the Tour de France so far. I hope everyone got to see today's stage 9 into Laurens in the French Pyrenees. It was a great stage. It was really hard the whole time. You rarely get stages like this that are just on from the gun. It was like the whole day was a breakaway and everyone was in it. Mark Hirschi had an 80K solo breakaway. It looked like he was doing a time trial over a couple big mountain passes, got caught right before the finish, and Tadej Pogacar won the sprint. Primoz Roglic took the yellow jersey via time bonuses, and Egan Bernal showed us some signs of life by attacking on the final climb, the Col de la Marie Blanc. We last checked in together after stage 3, and we were previewing stage 4, which was the race's first summit finish. So we're going to go over stages. We're going to touch on the important stuff from stage 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If you want the minutiae of each stage, I am actually writing a daily newsletter that's available at beyondthepeloton.substack.com. The daily version is a premium option, but there's a free weekly newsletter that I highly recommend signing up for if you just are new to it and want to get a feel for what you're going to get if you sign up for the paid version. Let's just talk about where we are, where the GC is after the stage today. So if we just pull up the standings, Primoz Roglic is in yellow in first place. He took it from Adam Yates, who cracked. I had some crackpot theories that Yates could hold on. I was writing about this in the newsletter thinking that Yates could challenge for yellow. It was a silly, silly idea. But what's interesting is, so Roglic is in first, Bernal, I think it's Egan Bernal, I've been saying Egan, so sorry, I've been saying your name wrong. Guillaume Martin, Romain Baudet, Nairo Quintana, Rigoberto Urán, Tadej Pogacar, Adam Yates in 8, Miguel Angel Lopez in 9, and Mikel Landa in 10th. Landa actually has been riding really well. He just got caught out in the crosswinds and lost, I bet, a minute. I think it was like a minute 20, might be a minute 30 on stage 7. So did Pogacar, but Pogacar's been chipping time back. What's interesting is, so Roglic is 21 seconds over Egan Bernal, but they finished. There's been no stage where there's been a time gap between them. So he's getting all that time from time bonuses at the finish and at the bonus sprints on the last climbs of the day, which shows you that just how much more pop and powerful he is. Bernal, to me, has not looked his normal self. He's kind of a Dane Cash on the Cycling Tips podcast said that Urán was a chameleon because you can just never tell like what you're going to get from him. Bernal is kind of the same way. I mean, we don't have that big of a track record from him. He won the Tour last year. He was a domestique the year before. But other than that, we don't really have a lot from him. Those are the only 2 Grand Tours he's ever done. It sounds crazy. I'll check it right now. Those are the only 2 Grand Tours he's ever done. So it's a little disingenuous, I feel like, when kind of the conventional wisdom is like, yes, Bernal he hasn't looked good. I mean, he really got his butt kicked on stage 4, the stage after I last checked in with you guys. Roglic looked incredible. Pogacar was second. And Bernal was really struggling. And it was kind of the same on stage 6. His team was a little bit stronger, but he allegedly could be heard telling his teammate to slow down. And then on stage 8 yesterday, I mean, it almost looked like he was going to get dropped at points. Up the Parasord climb, he was just really dangling on the back. I frankly thought it was a mistake. I thought Roglic made a mistake. His Jumbo team really took control of the race on that climb and just really shredded the race apart. Tom Dumoulin even sacrificed himself for him, and then he just kind of didn't really do anything. Pogacar attacked. He let him go. It looked like, just the way he was riding, it looked like he could have gone with him. I was a little confused about why he didn't do that. Pogacar stayed away, pulled out like 40 seconds. I thought it was a missed opportunity, but he knows best. He's the rider in the race. What do I know? But this is kind of a weakness of his, where he tends to be overly defensive sometimes. He'll just like throttle back, miss opportunities that come back to bite him later. I thought he could have put time into Bernal, but the way Bernal rode today, he did look quite a bit better, and it made me think, you know, maybe he couldn't have dropped him. You know, maybe it was the smart move just to kind of sit back and put pressure on everyone else to chase Pogacar, since he has, you know, he's the best of the GC riders time-wise. You know, they're going to be more afraid of Pogacar stealing time than he is, so why not let them do the work? So maybe that, you know, it could have been a smart decision that I just thought was silly at the time. So the GC going into the first rest day, Primoz Roglic is he's just literally the leader. So he's in the best position you could be out of everybody. He's looked quite strong. He looks like he's been throttling back at points. I'd say Pogacar has looked the strongest rider in the race. He has looked incredible. If it wasn't for the time he lost in the crosswinds on stage 7, he might be leading this race. It's obviously a little bit different because if they were tied on time, maybe Roglic would have marked him on the climb yesterday. But he's actually posting his rides to Strava with power, which is super rare for a Tour de France contender. Like today, he became the youngest rider, I believe, in Tour de France history to ever win a stage and then just titled it. This is the default lunch ride. That is a power play, folks. But his power on these power files it's insane. So yesterday up the Paris-Sud, allegedly, he set the fastest time of all time on that climb, which is wild. So he attacked, and the 10 minutes between when he attacked and crested the climb, he averaged 424 watts, which is bananas. For someone, he weighs 66 kilos, which is like 145 pounds. So that's like 10 pounds lighter than Lance Armstrong in his prime, I think. Sorry, Lance, if I'm overestimating your weight. And I think that's about the power that Lance was doing. We obviously, none of us have access to Lance's power files. I would bet that's pretty close. And Lance was on tons of drugs. Keep that in mind. But so the last 9 minutes of the final climb today, he averaged 427 watts, which is it's crazy. I mean, he has spikes in here where he's going close to 1,000 watts, especially on that. There was bonus sprints at the top. He was sprinting Roglic. Their wheels got tied up and he almost crashed. But other than that, I mean, they just blew away. I think Richie Porte and Romain Bardet had bridged up to them, and they got dropped in that sprint. And then had to join the Quintana group that was chasing. The Quintana and Martin were chasing, and they never caught back on. They ended up finishing 11 seconds behind. So, I mean, he's throwing down like serious power. He won the sprint today in the finish. He's a Slovenian time trial champ, having beaten Primoz Roglic. I mean, and he has 3-week pedigree. He finished third in the Vuelta, and really he was only third. His team stunk in the team time trial. They got second to last. He lost like a minute. He lost like half a minute the second stage. Things got really hairy on a few climbs close to the finish. Just like really tricky, typical Vuelta finish. He lost like a minute and a half to Roglic in the time trial. So he's starting minutes down, and then he started to chip away, and he got third by the end, and he was riding strong. He was the strongest rider in the Vuelta in that 3 week. And let's remember, that's the most recent Grand Tour to occur. Primoz Roglic won it with just like a really fantastic ride. He was quite strong in the 3 week, even though everyone says he's bad in the 3 week. And Pogacar was surging strong. He almost caught Valverde for second, but ended up third. And I think he's 21 now. He was 20 during that race. So it's totally crazy. He's looked really strong. He's looked the strongest rider in the race. And, you know, I think it's going to be, the podium's going to be Roglic, Bernal, Pogacar, and in some iteration of that, of those three. I think, frankly, Roglic is going to win. Pogacar second, Bernal's third, because if we look at the podium, or if we look at the top 10 right now, it's pretty clustered, and that's been the narrative. But what no one is mentioning is the stage 20 time trial, which is quite long. It's 36K long, and it finishes on a 6-kilometer climb, La Planche de la Belle Fille, which is pretty steep. that's a lot. Like someone like Romain Bardet, who's having a good race, I'm not even really considering him a serious contender because he could lose 2.5 minutes easy on that stage. Someone like Mikel Landa, he's going to lose tons of time. Guillaume Martin, he's just going to hemorrhage time. Nairo Quintana, he's going to lose lots of time. Uran can sometimes have time trial, but he's probably going to lose lots of time. So if it, I mean, Bernal's pretty, he's a pretty good time trialist. Not great, but he's the best of all those, like, quote unquote climbers with time trialing. And then Roglic and Pogacar are just absolute animals in the time trial. Roglic is, like, considered a better time trialist than a climber, even though he's the best, probably the second best climber in the race behind Pogacar. So it's going to be tough to beat him. I mean, it doesn't quite, unless something drastic happens where they're either caught out in crosswinds or they crash, I don't see anyone being able to drop them in the mountains. And I have a hard time seeing Pogacar dropping Roglic. He's just so good at marking him. I think he's going to win. And Bernal, the narrative with him is, it's, oh, well, he's a great high altitude climber. It's like that could be true. So it's like he just has to wait until the third week when we get to the Alps and it gets to the high altitude, and he's going to put, I heard, quote unquote, minutes in everyone. Well, he's literally never done that. The most he's ever put into a group at the Tour de France is 58 seconds, which was stage 18 of last year. But he attacked to the top of the climb and the race got suddenly just like cut off. And they had a long descent, a ride through a valley, and then a final climb. So for all we know, that group could have, him and Simon Yates were alone. They could have gotten caught by the chasing group behind, and then he doesn't put any time to anyone. You know, we don't know what would have happened. Maybe he would have stayed away and won. Maybe he would have put 3 minutes into him. But, you know, just looking at what we have, he's never put minutes into anyone in the high mountains, in the tour or another grand tour, because he's never ridden one. And also the conventional wisdom was, well, the first summit finish can't really tell us anything. Well, I went back through the last few editions since 2012, and at the first summit finish in every edition but 2019, pretty much foretold the winner of the race eventually. And so in 2018, Geraint Thomas wins the first summit finish and gets the yellow jersey on stage 11, so pretty early. So 2017, Chris Froome gets third on the first summit finish, and he took the other overall lead, lost it though on stage 12, got it back on stage 14. 2016, Chris Froome gets second on the out of the GC group on the first summit finish and takes the jersey, actually took the jersey before that on stage 8 and held that all the way to the finish. 2015, Chris Froome wins the first summit finish and took the lead earlier on stage 7. 2014, Vincenzo Nibali, he is second out of the GC group on the first summit finish. I'm taking out breakaways from this just because it's kind of clouds the data. I don't think it's super pertinent. And took the race lead well before that on stage 2 and held that all the way. I think there was actually maybe 2 stages where he didn't have it, but they just kind of gifted it to somebody and then got it back. 2013, Chris Froome wins the first summit finish and gets the race lead on stage 8. 2012, Bradley Wiggins gets third on the first summit finish, won by Chris Froome actually, and got the jersey on stage 7. So in all those editions, excluding 2019, the first summit finish kind of told us what was going to happen. You had to be in the top few riders, and the eventual winner got the jersey quite early around stage 9, which is when Primoz Roglic got it and held it all the way to the line. So it's not too early for him to have it. Don't listen to that narrative. It's really silly and just frankly not true. Bernal just has to wait until the high mountains. Well, he's good in the high mountains. He's quite good. He's from Colombia. He's very used to it. He and his ancestors have been living up there for a very long time. But Pogacar won a stage at the Vuelta in Andorra last year, which is quite high, which is about as high as the Tour is going this year. So he's pretty good too at altitude. And Roglic is no slouch. He won a mountain stage, and he won stage 18 of the Tour 2018 Tour, which went over the Tourmalet, which is really freaking high. And won that stage, and that same stage that Pogacar won at the Vuelta, he was third. So they're pretty good at altitude. It's not like, it can't be a strategy of just, oh, we're going to get to high altitude, everyone's going to wilt away, and Bernal's going to win. It's like, Bernal, he's not this like rider that everyone will tell you he is, where he's just going to blow the race apart in the mountains and drop everyone. He was pretty calculating. At 2019, the field was much weaker. The two strongest riders at this race are Pogacar and Roglic. They were not at that race. Mikel Landa has proved to be one of the strongest riders here. He was at the race, but he had done the Vuelta or done the Giro, and he was really there just working for the team, wasn't at his best. And I mean, think Out of shape, Garrett Thomas got second, and then Stephen Kreuzwick got third. Those are, I mean, that's not like a killer podium. So that shows you the level that that race was at. And Bernal was, he was struggling, not unlike, actually, maybe a little bit more than he was this year through the first 2 weeks. And then only was able to snipe some time in those last couple stages. Pino fell apart, which, also, I should say, Thibaut Pino was looking great, fell apart on stage eight, like lost. I think, I mean, he's 28 minutes behind in the GC right now. So he's way down. So Thibaut Pino fell apart. He was actually looking quite good in the 2019 tour. And it kind of fell into Bernal's lap a little bit. That's not going to happen this year. I mean, the competition's much higher. And the key thing is there wasn't a time trial at the finish. So he could just kind of wait and wait and wait, steal some time, and boom, he's won the race. But it's like, if he waits too long, the TT's coming up, he needs minutes. I mean, he might need a minute and a half, 2 minutes to hold off a Roglic or Pogacar in that time trial. So, but it's also, it's a kind of funny thing. It's a little bit correlated. So if like Roglic is loses 2 minutes to him by the time trial, he probably won't pull back 2 minutes because his form would be fading. So it's not necessarily like, you don't really want to think about it like that, where, oh, Roglic lost 2.5 minutes, but he pulls it back in the time trial, where those performances are correlated, where if he's going to be strong in the time trial, he's probably not going to give up any time to Bernal in the mountains. There's also been an interesting phenomenon at this tour where teams are less important. Like, we're getting like mano-a-mano fights on these climbs, which I haven't seen in years, 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 years. It's always, you always get like Team Sky, or they haven't been as dominant since they changed to Ineos, but as Team Sky, they would have just powered over that final climb today with like two or three riders, and literally nothing would have happened, and they would have won the stage, and it would have been really boring. But there's just no dominant team like that anymore. So you're just getting, with a few kilometers left in the climb, Pogacar attacked. I think Jumbo had four riders. Boom, they're all gone. He just completely blew their entire team up, and Roglic is isolated along with every other rider. So that's like a great little wrinkle of this race, where we're seeing more. It's almost like old school racing, where it's just like GC contender on GC contender on the ends of climbs. So that's been really fun. And that will probably continue to be that way to an extent. Jumbo is the strongest team in the race. Ineos is really seems to be really struggling. I think that's going to continue. But one key thing for Roglic is Tom Dumoulin kind of took himself out of any potential GC battle, and he seems to be just working for Roglic, which is what Bernal was really missing that last year with Thomas, where he was trying to win the race for himself. I thought they played it a little too cute, and he almost lost the race overall because of it. Bernal did. So when it happened on stage eight, it looked a little silly, where Dumoulin like blew the race up, pulled off, and then Roglic attacked with Pogacar. They got caught, and then he didn't really do anything. It's like, well, what was the point of that? But I think long term, it's good because it sets this hierarchy. When like Pogacar attacked today again, Dumoulin pegged him back. Like he just gave everything he had to keep him close. And I think it's what helped the eventual junction to be made, which helped Roglic not lose any time. So I think that is a big plus for Roglic going forward. And if we just look at the BetMGM odds right now, the Tour de France 2020 general classification, Roglic is at -150. So you'd have to bet $150 to win 100. Pogacar's at +275. So you'd have to bet $100 to win 275. And then Bernal's below him at +325. So that's pretty interesting that the betting markets are leaning more towards Pogacar than Bernal. And then you have Quintana at +2,000, which is, and then any other in the field at +900. So that Quintana thing is interesting. He's been great. I think he's been totally undercovered. But the fundamental problem with him, it's the same thing with Bardet. It's less of an issue with Quintana than Bardet, because Quintana could maybe, I mean, in theory, maybe he could pull out like 3 minutes in a mountain stage. It's probably not going to happen, but it could happen. But he would just need a bucket of time going into that final time trial. I don't see it happening, but I would. And I mean, it's, you saw this today where the group chasing Mark Hirschi to launch. So Mark Hirschi is like 22. Pogacar is 21. Egan Bernal is 23. Mikel Landa and Primoz Roglic are the old guys in that group. So this is the front group today. Mikel Landa's 30, old man Landa. Roglic is 30. So that front group was 21, 22, 23, 30, 30. And then let's look at that, the group of GC favorites that got distanced. Let's look it up. It was Bokom Elema, Guillaume Martin, Romain Bardet, Richie Porte, Roberta Arán, and Nairo Quintana. There might have been someone else in there, but they're the important ones. Mollema's 33. Martin's 27, young guy. Bardet's 29. Richie Porte's 35. Arán's 33. Nairo Quintana's 30. So are we seeing a clear trend there where it was kind of the old guys getting distanced at the end of this climb when things got really, really hard, and they're chasing these young guys? And to me, it's a sign of like a change into the guards, like a sign of things to come in the near future, where this was like a clear, especially the stage today, it was Mark Hirschi being chased down and beaten by Mark Hirschi, 22 years old, being beaten by a 21-year-old. I mean, it's turning into a young man's sport to an extent. And these young guys are so good that I just think like Arán, Quintana, Porte, they're just like a little bit on. I mean, Bardet is only 29, but he seems to have, I mean, he's riding great. This is one of his best tours ever. I just don't think he's at the level that these younger riders are at. And they would need to take big time before the time trial. So I'm not going to talk about them too much, but just know that I appreciate their efforts. And I do think we're going to get a Quintana stage win before the race is over, and we could potentially get a Bardet stage win. And I think we could see either Martin, Bardet, or Quintana, one of those three on the podium. That wouldn't be crazy. So there's certainly factors. Don't think I'm forgetting them. And then if we look at the green jerseys, Sagan's been really off with that, really off. I would say if I had bet on him, I would be seriously concerned. But the odds, the mid-race odds are -118 for him to win. So you'd have to bet $118 to win 100. Sam Bennett +125. Wout van Aert +700. Julian Alaphilippe +2,000. That's not going to happen. Matteo Trentin +3,300. That's interesting. And let's just look at the current standings. Sagan leads by 7 points. So on stage seven, his Bora team blew the race up early. It was beautiful. He got actually, the idea was to win the intermediate sprint and then to win the stage by getting rid of the sprinters. They kind of did that, but he got beat in the intermediate sprint by Matteo Trentin, who's fifth in the points classification, so not too far back. And then got beat. He had a problem with his chain in the final, but he wouldn't have beat Wout van Aert. Wout van Aert crushed him. Wout van Aert's in third, 111 points. So Sam Bennett's 131, Sagan's 138. Wout van Aert's not going to win because he's not going to win a single intermediate sprint point because he frankly does not. This is not a priority for him and his Jumbo team. He's been winning these stages and they're fantastic. It seems like any sprint stage that gets pulled back, he could win if he chooses to. It has to be incredibly demoralizing for everyone else, but I mean, it's super impressive. I said in the newsletter, it's like potentially Merckx level greatness because he's also crushing it on the climbs. I mean, he's like one of the last domestiques left out of any team on the climbs, and he's not even a climber. It's really impressive. But someone commented on one of the newsletters that, you know, it's a little weird that they're letting them do this because like, let's say there's Sky. Sky would never let anyone do this. It would just be like all in for the team. We're not going to worry about anything other than that. So it's a little frivolous that they're doing this. I kind of think that it helps keep him happy. And if he's happy, he's probably going to work a little bit better on the mountain stages. And it just helps the morale of the team. I mean, you're winning. That's fun. It just kind of like you got the momentum. Mo's on your side and you're feeling good. And also, it's like you only live once. Like, I don't know. You don't want to be, if you're too calculating, it's, I think that kind of infected the Ineos. I mean, Ineos has been quite bad, and they were actually quite bad last year. Thomas and Bernal were good. Other than that, the team was not that good. So I think over time, that kind of super seriousness, it can be a bit toxic and corrosive in the team. It's just my personal theory. So I think it's great for us that they're letting him go for these stages. I think there is dividends that's paying dividends for the team, that it keeps the morale up. Because they've been working hard, they've been doing good on these bounce stages, but at the end of the day, they're getting their butt kicked. Everyone but Roglic is just getting their butt kicked. And so, that could be a little like monotonous and demoralizing. So I think there's something to be said for letting him win these stages. But he's not gonna win the green jersey, because that would be a huge waste of resources, of energy. The mountain jersey odds, I haven't been covering this at all. Benoit Cosnefroy is winning it. Total surprise. I didn't think he would hold it this long. He's not a clear heir apparent there. He's not gonna hold the thing. He's not that great of a climber, which makes it even more impressive that he's held it. Nance Peters is in second from Auger Duet, Le Mondial. That's actually his teammate, just because he had a fantastic ride through the Pyrenees on stage 8 and won the stage. Mark Hirschi from today is third. I don't see him continuing to. You've really got to be on it and chasing these points if you want to win this thing. You have Ilner Zakarin. Yeah, maybe he could do it. Tom Schwiens. And then it kind of gets interesting because you have Primoz Roglic, Tadej Pogacar in 7th and 8th. And if a GC contender, they can kind of accidentally win the mountains jersey sometimes. Because if they're chasing these bonus sprint points, they can pick up mountain points on accident. And if there's summit finishes, they're going to win mountain points then. But so it's any person in the field other than the ones they list at plus 275. Julian Alaphilippe at plus 400. I've heard him talked a lot in this. I wouldn't bet on him at all because he didn't win it last year when he was flying up mountains. So I don't think he's going to win it this year. David Godal on FDJ. They don't have anything going on right now since Pino is not doing well at plus 450. Maybe he could win. Mark Hirschi at plus 700. Hirschi would really have to make it an effort. If he made an effort, he could do it. Pogacar plus 800. Roglic plus 1400. Pogacar wouldn't be a crazy one to bet on here, because to get the time back, he still needs to make up time from losing time in the crosswinds. And he could accidentally, inadvertently get mountain points by doing that. But yeah, I'm not great. KOM jersey, it's hard to follow. I'm never paying attention that much. It's fun to see Benoit chasing those points, and that's about as much as I think about it. So I wouldn't bet on it too much. Alaphilippe lost the jersey. I'm sure everyone saw this. Alaphilippe lost the jersey. He got a bottle hand up in the last 20K of stage 5. It's total bonehead move. I don't even know why he was taking a bottle at that speed himself. That's what teammates are for. But he got a 20-second time penalty, so Adam Yates got the jersey. I think this is a theory floated by someone in the know that it was a ketone. So ketones are, I don't know too much about them. It's an energy source that was developed by the U.S. military fairly recently. It's very prevalent. They're very expensive, so not every team can afford to use them. But the wealthy teams can. And you have to take it in the last 20 minutes of a hard effort. And just because he didn't need it that day, it wasn't a particularly hard stage, but I bet they use them very habitually. They kind of get psychologically addicted, or maybe you even have to use them every day. I don't know that much about them, but I would bet money that that was a ketones bottle. And that's why they were so desperate to get it up to him. Stage 6. Oh, Alexa Lucinko won. It looked so easy for him. I actually like him. I like him as a rider. It's kind of a fun rider to watch, but he is rumored to be working with Dr. Ferrari along with Jakob Fuglsang. So that is a little suspicious to me. But, we should be betting. I won't get into the details of the event. It was kind of a botched, leaked investigation that they hired this PI firm to investigate these rumors that they were working together. And then it just like the investigation just kind of got stopped. It's like you can use that information to make money, where it's like, you know, if you look into that, it's like, okay, they're working with Ferrari most likely. And the UCI doesn't really want to do anything about it because they don't want to bust other big names. It just looks bad for the sport. So just bet on them on stages that look like Fuglsang in the Giro. Fuglsang's not a great Grand Tour rider, but if you can get a good price on him, he's flying right now. So, you know, if the UCI is not going to do anything about it, use it to your advantage. Stage seven were crosswinds. And Pogacar lost time, Landa lost time, Port lost time. Ineos dropped Carapaz because he got a flat tire. And so that's relevant. It's relevant, obviously, because it happened in the past. But so this day, the day after the rest day, stage 10 is, if you look at the profile, it's pancake flat, like ridiculously, hilariously flat. But it's a long, it starts on an island, goes over a bridge into like mainland France, goes along the coast, finishes on an island. It's going to be super windy, big time crosswinds. So we could see one of these big favorites. You could easily see multiple big favorites lose time. I don't know who it is. It's probably not going to be Roglic because his team is so strong. Probably not going to be Bernal because his team's fairly strong. Pogacar doesn't have much of a team, you know, so that makes him vulnerable. Someone like Quintana has actually, you'd think he'd be terrible in crosswinds because he's so small and doesn't have a strong team, but he's got a good nose. He knows where to be on those stages. He's pretty good at that. Iran is a little bit of a, I think he's slightly susceptible to getting caught out in crosswinds. He's kind of like an airhead. I don't know him personally, but I just kind of get that vibe. Miguel Angel Lopez is always at risk of being caught out in the crosswinds. Mikko Landa, always at risk. Richie Porte, always at risk. Yeah, so I mean, one of these, Martin actually would be the one I'd be really worried about. He's essentially riding this race unattached. Cofidis is so bad. They're like probably the worst team in this race. Actually, if he finishes on the podium or wins the race, it kind of like disproves the theory you need a good team. But he would be, I would actually be really worried about him on that. I think it's going to be carnage on stage 10, and I would be worried about him. I am worried about him. I would be worried about him if I had a rooting interest, but I don't. I'm objective. I'm kidding. I love the country of Slovenia. I'm obviously slanted towards the Slovenians. It's one of my favorite places to go. There's a coronavirus test happening probably right now as I record this. We'll know on Tuesday morning what the results are. If two people, even staff members on a team test positive, the whole team gets thrown out. So, I mean, the race, I guess, could be on its head by Tuesday morning. I hope that doesn't happen. That would be a huge bummer. But, yeah, I think Tuesday's going to be a crazy stage. So, we should go over next week really quick. So, Tuesday's flat, but could be windy. Wednesday is another sprint stage, a little bit hillier. Actually, it might have an uphill finish. Let me look. Yeah, it's kind of a tricky finish. It's like a sharp uphill and then downhill. So maybe you could see something funky happen at the finish, but it's not going to be crazy. It could be crosswinds, I guess. Stage 12 is classic breakaway day. It's like if you looked up breakaway day in the dictionary, you would see stage 12. Stage 13 is a short, steep summit finish. So that could get interesting, actually. You were not going to see big time gaps, but you could see small time gaps. Stage 14 is another breakaway day. Stage 15 is Grand Colombier. So for those that are paying attention, we did this at the Dauphiné.
Hi, it's me. Sorry. I said, for those that are paying attention and then said Dauphiné, I meant to say Tour de Lan. I realized the irony of that.
Last month, and Roglic crushed everybody. So, yeah, I don't, this would be like a type of stage where people would say Bernal's going to do well. So it's going to be really interesting to watch it. If Bernal's not dropping people on that stage, things could be tough for him later on. I think Roglic and Pogacar are going to wreck house on that. And then we kind of entered the Alps. Then we're in the Alps, and it's fun. Stage 17 is not too hard. Stage 17 is very hard. I think it finishes on like a steep bike path. They're doing this project in France where they build bike paths between ski resorts, and it's like a really, really, really steep bike path, and they finish on top. So that's going to be a crazy stage. So yeah, that's it for this week. Let's, everyone have a great rest day, And it's going to be, I think, an exciting week of racing this coming week. And then we're into the third week after that. So thank you for joining. And check out the newsletter at beyondthepeloton.substack.com if you'd like. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye.